Hello and welcome to another Texans Talk podcast. I'm your host for the week, Anthony Wood, and with me today is Sean Pendergast of Sports Radio 610. Sean, thank you very much for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be on with you, Anthony.
Thank you very much. And sorry to the listeners out there if this podcast is a little bit dull. There's not exactly been a lot of news the last couple of days. So, where do we begin? Let's go ahead and start off with the Jadeveon Clowney trade. I mean, why not? I've seen some of your tweets that you've been a little less than complimentary of the deal overall. Could you give us some of your thoughts on the trade?
Yeah, I just think it's hard to spin it any way other than it's just a disgrace is the word I've used. I haven't really backed off of that because I think this situation, you know, unless we find out something about Clowney that we don't know, and Bill O'Brien just got done doing a press conference within the last hour or so of you and I recording this, where he had a lot of really nice things to say about Jadeveon Clowney. So, unless there's something that we don't know behind the scenes about Clowney, which I don't think there is, I just don't think that O'Brien completely buys with him. I don't think he fit for whatever reason with whatever culture it is that O'Brien's trying to create. They went and moved him, and that's, you know, that unto itself is a little bit disturbing just because I think it's Bill O'Brien's job to kind of manage different personalities and the like. But the fact that they let it get to after the July 15th deadline to extend him to where it reduced the value of Clowney, I mean, they essentially turned Clowney into something that a team like Seattle could just give spare parts to the Texans and rent him for a year. So I just think it was completely mishandled. I know we're going to talk about the Tunsil trade, which I really like, but the best possible Texans team in 2019 would have been adding Laramie Tunsil and keeping Jadeveon Clowney. And based on what they got in each of those trades, there was nothing in the Clowney trade that they needed to then go execute the Tunsil trade. Those two trades were done completely independent of one another. So the Clowney trade is just, it's a real head scratcher, and it's, you know, it's F-minus for me.
And I mean, how do you feel about the Texans agreeing to pay him $7 million as well as part of this year's deal? I mean, what's your thoughts on that? That came out yesterday.
Yeah, I'm not as caught up in that as some are, because the Texans, they wanted to get Clowney out of there, which that overall mentality to me is the part that I'm disturbed about. Now, once you get that mentality that you just got to get him out of there, then whatever it is you did to unload him, whether it was taking back pennies on the dollar or paying $7 million, they have a ton of cap space. $7 million in the grand scheme of things, it sounds crazy to say, but not a ton of money. Cost of doing business. The Seahawks were up against the cap, and they felt like they needed to do that in order to facilitate the deal. I just thought the deal was bad overall. It's just one more thing about the deal that's really, it shows how badly they wanted to get rid of him. So to me, it's not anything that I look at and I go, you know, and then on top of it, they paid $7 million. The whole thing just has a stink on it to me that I don't like.
And how do you feel about the players that they got in return for this? I mean, ultimately, no disrespect intended to these guys, but they got two backup linebackers in this trade. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't anticipate either of them being a big part of whatever success the Texans have. I know O'Brien said a lot of nice things about both guys at his press conference today. That's what he's supposed to do. He's the head coach, and he's trying to sell this deal. Markevious Mingo's a guy who's already had multiple chances in multiple spots to be an impact player, and he hasn't been. The Martin kid is, I guess, Jake Martin is kind of interesting. He was a rookie last year, so, you know, theoretically he's maybe got some upside. And then they get a third-round pick, and the Texans just haven't been good drafting in the third round. There's really nothing about that trade that gets me excited at all. That trade, when I woke up, Anthony, Saturday morning, and it was on 9:15, and I went on Twitter and I saw the stuff about Clowney heading to Seattle I'm from Seattle, and I'm getting a little geeked up about what they might get in return. Then when I saw what they were getting, I didn't shower and eat for like the next. I didn't shower and eat until they traded for Laramie Tunsil.
And I mean, you mentioned obviously that the Texans, they made a mistake not doing this earlier before the July 15th deadline. How much do you think it would have benefited them to have done it before that deadline? How much more do you think they could have gotten out of a potential trade for Clowney?
I think they definitely would have been able to I think teams may have been more willing to engage them. I think there's a lot of teams out there that were hesitant to give up anything of substance for Clowney because they couldn't agree to anything. They had no guarantee he was gonna stay there. Now, I don't know if Seattle would have been able to do a deal because of their cap situation. You know, I don't know that they have any intention of signing Clowney long term right now. I think they just looked at it and said, really, a third round pick and a couple of role players on our team to reignite our pass rush, which they had to trade Frank Clark. So they were down from Frank Clark. They had to trade into Kansas City. So now they've got that element of their game back with Clowney. I think clearly they would have been able to engage more teams in substantive talks that would have yielded something more than what they got. Would it have ultimately happened? Would teams have ultimately bid on it? I don't know. But I just know it would have been better to try to get a deal done before July 15th. And who knows? Maybe they were, and none of the deals they saw were to their liking. And then I think probably Bill O'Brien got a real wake-up call as to just how bad their left tackle situation was in training camp. And then that's really what started the talks with the Dolphins and the Texans, was trying to move Clowney for Laremy Tunsil. And then I think Clowney was probably ready to come in and play on the franchise tag, but then when he saw that the team was trying to move him and trade him, he realized, holy crap, I need to take control of this situation, and I'm not going to sign this franchise tender until I have a say over where I go. And good for him. He wound up going to Seattle, which was one of the places where he wanted to go. But clearly they tried to do something, and maybe they did before July 15th. They would have gotten more. It's almost impossible to imagine a scenario where they could get less than what they got from Seattle.
Certainly. And I mean, at the end of the day, there is this impression that O'Brien somehow got fleeced from this trade. And do you think, in the long run, this is going to come back to haunt them?
Not if they win. I mean, if they win, here's the thing. I mean, they're still a pretty good football team. I think you could argue they're a better football team for 2019 now than they were at the beginning of the day on Saturday. And then you're not even assuming that Clowney would have been in the fold and there in week one. I certainly think they're more equipped to deal with the first part of their schedule now. And it sounds weird to say because they're facing all these good quarterbacks. Their first six quarterbacks they face are, you know, Breeze, Foles, Rivers, Newton, Ryan, and Mahomes. Not that I've been obsessing over the schedule or anything. And it sounds weird to say because intuitively you'd go, well, you want to make sure you have Clowney on the field to deal with those quarterbacks, you know, to get after those quarterbacks. But number one, getting after the quarterback wasn't always J.D. Clowney's strong suit. And number two, I think even with Clowney on the field, those offenses are going to score 30 points on this Texans defense. To me, I think you need to be equipped to get into shootouts with these teams. You need to be equipped to go series for series with these teams. And the offense is equipped to do that now. I think not just with Tunsil, but I like the Duke Johnson trade. I like Kenny Stills being mixed into this trade. So they're a better team. I think, in my opinion, they're a better team now than they were at the beginning of the day on Saturday.
Ironically, I think they have to look.
I don't know if that answered your original question. But that's where I wound up with the answer.
I think, ironically, they're going to have to look back to that Seahawks Texans game back in 2017, Watson's rookie year. That was Dwayne Brown's last game, but that was a real sort of offensive shootout more than anything. It was just who can score more points than the other. At the end of the day, there was no defense had nothing to do with that game. So I think that's certainly the way they're going to have to go.
I remember you were asking me if the moves are going to come back to bite the Texans, trading Clowney and whatnot. And if they win, I don't think anybody's going to care. You know, if they win, they're not going to. If the Texans win this year, they're not going to care that Clowney got dumped for a third round pick and a couple of spare parts. That's the bottom line. These moves are really risky. They have to work. You know, for Bill O'Brien's sake, these moves have to work.
Certainly, and I think obviously it leaves a big hole on defense. We've talked about Martin Mingo, and obviously the Texans re-signed Brennan Scarlett as well not too long ago. So one of the players that I know is going to benefit from this probably most of all is Whitney Mercilus. I mean, we've seen him this offseason. He's looked very good. He's in good shape. What are you expecting from him this year, especially now with Clowney out?
Yeah, I think, he gets an opportunity, which I think is more than he was getting last year. He was really miscast last year, and some of it was Whitney wasn't healthy to start the season. He missed all of training camp. So he was behind the eight ball to start the season. And then the season starts, and he's still kind of working his way back in. You know, you've got JJ rushing off of one edge and Clowney rushing off of the other edge. So Whitney's out there doing things last year where he's kind of running around like an inside linebacker, covering tight ends and things like that. He's just not, that's not his deal. He gets his old position back. He's got to be thrilled about Clowney getting moved out. He looked, as you just said, he looked in great shape in training camp. Looked really good. It's a contract year for him, so it's a big year. You know, this is his last big swing at another payday. You know, he's going to be 30 pretty soon. So I think Whitney Mercilus has got to be super invigorated for the upcoming season. As far as what to expect from him, I mean, boy, if you think about it, it's been since 2016 was the last time that he was healthy and being used the way that they intended to when they drafted him. You know, because 2017, he tore the pectoral muscle in week 5 against the Chiefs. And then last year was just a funky year for him, you know, injured in training camp and then used in a really strange way throughout the season. So he's a huge X factor. I think part of why they felt they could move on from J.D. Clowney is there was a huge trust factor that they could get maybe not the exact same production from Mercilus that they got from Clowney. I think that would be a little foolish. But I certainly think there's a part of them that figures, you know, if we can get 75% of what Clowney gave us from Whitney, ultimately, if we sign him to an extension, we're probably getting it at about a third of the price that it would cost Clowney. And I guarantee that value metric is in play with the Texans.
Absolutely, and obviously looking at that Texans defense, we got JJ Watt, it's been a long morning. JJ Watt, the opposite side, obviously we don't know how this is really going to affect him at this point in time because we haven't gotten to see this Texans defense without Clowney any sort of factor at all recently. How much is this going to, do you think this will affect him in the long run in terms of, is he going to be double teamed a lot more? Is there going to be that much more focus now on Watt, and is it going to be that much harder for him to be as productive as he has been in recent years?
Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, Clowney drew a lot of double teams last year. But I think just by nature, life is going to be a little harder for J.J. Watt. And I don't know if I'm more worried about that on the stat sheet or I'm just more worried about the punishment that J.J. is taking at this stage of his career with his body having been through what he's been through. Now, I'll say this, J.J. Watt has looked incredible in training camp. He's looked really good.
That's all we want to hear, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, given what he had gone through in 2016 and 2017, that's got to be music to Texan fans here. So he looks to be in the 2014-2015 condition of J.J. Watt. Those two seasons, he was Defensive Player of the Year, and Clowney was a non-factor those seasons. So, he's J.J. Watt. It's not one of these things where he's been schemed into 16 sacks because they were double-teaming Clowney. That helped. But they're going to find ways to let J.J. cut loose. I think there's a lot of pressure on Romeo Crennel to try to scheme around the absence of Jadeveon Clowney, because let's face it, Jadeveon Clowney allowed Romeo Crennel to do a lot of things that were unconventional in that front seven with the way he moved him around as much as he did, and just what a tour de force athletically Clowney was. So, you know, but Rack's been doing this a long time. He'll figure some things out. By nature, J.J. Watt's job just got more difficult, but I'm confident he's equipped to deal with it.
So let's move on to the next trade now. You've hinted, obviously, at your happiness with the Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills trade. I mean, this is an upgrade on offense. I don't think there's any question about that. It might have cost them an arm, a leg, maybe kidney, liver, head as well. But at the end of the day, how much do you think this is going to benefit them?
I think it's going to be huge. The Tunsil trade is one of those things that's going to have, because it directly impacts Deshaun Watson. We're really going to see what Deshaun Watson can do. Now, they still got work to do along the rest of the offensive line, but they finally have a foundational piece. You know, that's the one thing, you know, forget about just how poorly they played on Sundays, week to week as an offensive line. There was nothing you could look at with this offensive line the last 2 years and go, okay, if that guy develops, then we know at least we've got an anchor here or here or here, you know, just at different spots on the left. There was no player that you could say that about. But the closest thing that they even drafted or signed to be something like that was probably Nick Martin, and he hasn't been good. So I think in the short term, obviously, you have now one of the five best left tackles in football. Over the long term, you've got an anchor along your offensive line that you haven't had since Duane Brown in 2016, really, because 2017 he held out and played that one Seattle game you were just talking about a little bit earlier. So this is the first time you really had that anchor and a foundational piece, and I think they hope that Titus Howard is going to be that. I think they hope that Max Sharping will be that, maybe at right guard. Titus Howard probably eventually plays right tackle, but he'll be left guard this year. So it has a huge ripple effect, both, you know, week one against New Orleans and in 2025. You know what I mean? Like, this is what you traded for. This is why you gave up two first-round picks. This is why you traded a package similar to what the Bears gave up to get Khalil Mack. Laremy Tunsil is basically, to this offense, what Khalil Mack was to the Bears defense last year. So I have no problem. I mean, it hurts to give up that draft capital, but at the end of the day, I'm so excited about this offense. I think the fact that it directly impacts Deshaun Watson means that it directly impacts everybody. You know, if Deshaun Watson is more comfortable, if Deshaun Watson has time to throw, Deshaun Watson is able to make better decisions because he doesn't have defensive linemen bearing down on him at the rate they were last year, that means good things for Hopkins and Fuller, Stills, the tight ends, Duke Johnson. It's good for everybody. So I love the Tunsil deal. I love that they got Kenny Stills thrown into the mix as well. I think it's been an underrated need on this team the last couple of years as a veteran, steady wide receiver. You know, they tried to get one at the trade deadline last year in Demaryius Thomas, and I thought he served his role pretty well until he got hurt. But the good news for me, Anthony, for Texan fans, is that the situation the Texans got into in week 16 after Thomas got hurt, and then Fuller and QT were already hurt, you know, they went into week 17 with DeAndre Carter and Vincent Smith as their number two and three wide receivers. That's not happening again. Kenny Stills is a capable, veteran, speedy wide receiver who can play in the slot, who can play on the outside. I'm interested to see if O'Brien starts to do some things with maybe Stills and Fuller on the outside with Hopkins in the slot. Hopkins' numbers when he's in the slot are ungodly. So I think Stills is a very underrated piece that all of a sudden allows Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly to do some interesting things.
And that's what excites me most about this is the weapons that this offense has. I feel like we're really going to get to see them in use now properly. We've got, you mentioned Hopkins, we've got QT, Fuller, Stills, Carter. And then even on the practice squad, I felt like they did a decent job of keeping some of those veteran players. So it was Mitchell's back and Smith is back. So if injuries were to happen again, they've still got people who they know that know the system and they know they can rely on, which I really like. And I love the fact that they kept all the tight ends, because at the end of the day, I felt that was definitely going to be one of the tougher groups to cut down. I mean, how do you feel about the weapons now that he has at his disposal, not just the wide receiver, but at tight end and at running back as well?
Really good. I feel really good about them. You know, the tight end group, I think there's five of them on the roster right now, so I think something's going to give in the tight end group. You know, whether it's Waring going to IR, good for Jarrell Adams making the 53. You know, I think we expected Jordan Thomas, Jordan Akins, and Darren Fells to make it. But Jarrell Adams had a really good camp. He had a really good preseason. So it was cool to see him make it. And I think the thing about the tight end group that I noticed in being out of camp is that for the first time in a long time, they have a tight end group that, man, it looks like an NFL tight end group. You know what I mean? Like, you look at Darren Fells and Jordan Thomas, these are beasts. These are big, huge, hulking, athletic guys. Jordan Akins, pretty big, very athletic guy, former baseball player. Kahale Waring, I mean, you know, just physically, in terms of how he looks, obviously he needs to get on the field and play. He's the Jango Fett of the Texans roster. He's the one guy, I don't know how big a Star Wars fan you are, but that's the dude they cloned to basically create the entire army of stormtroopers. Is Jango. That's the guy. If we needed to defend the Earth from the aliens, I would clone Kahale Waring. I would make a million of him and then see how it goes. And then good for Jarrell Adams making the team. You know, who knows how much of it was just that viral moment he had of stiff-arming that poor Lions defensive back I was joking today on our show, like, what are the odds that Bill O'Brien just kept Jarrell Adams hoping he could dupe some GM that just watches Twitter, you know, to see, like, if he could get a fifth rounder for him or something. Like, you just hope that he watched that guy, Jarrell Adams, stiff arm that guy. So, anyways, long answer to say I really like the tight end group, just the look of the tight end group and the feel of the tight end group, way more than when it was Fedorowicz and Steven Anderson and Ryan Griffin. The receiving core, I think, especially with the addition of Stills, can be one of the best in the league. You start with the fact that they have the best receiver in the league in that core, and Fuller being a huge X factor. You know, the numbers for this offense with Fuller on the field are ungodly. And boy, the Duke Johnson trade all of a sudden looks really good when Lamar Miller goes out with an injury. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of people thought Bill O'Brien gave up too much for Duke Johnson, and I don't think he drew it up on the chalkboard. Like, well, when Lamar Miller gets hurt, people will really be saying this trade is awesome. But this is where we are. And Duke Johnson, hey, Carlos Hyde, we'll see what happens. It wouldn't shock me if they were still in the market for a running back. But I feel good. And obviously with Watson pulling the trigger, I think he's a quarterback who raises the level of everybody around him. Yeah, the most impressive, you know, as far as Deshaun goes, like I'll think back to that Eagle game once Demaryius Thomas went out. And this is week 16 of last year on the road at the defending Super Bowl champs 2 days before Christmas. So it's cold. They're down by 13 with like 6 minutes to go in the game. And Deshaun brings them all the way back. And the three big plays he made, you know, escaping the pocket, finding guys. The guys on the receiving end of those three plays were Jordan Akins, Vincent Smith, and Deontay Foreman. You know, the two touchdowns to Smith and Foreman and a big, I think, a third down play to Akins. I mean, at the time, really, like three nobodies. You know, like, that wasn't Hopkins he was throwing to or Fuller. It was Watson making plays and finding open guys that were essentially nobodies at that time. That's who he is. So whoever he has, he's going to raise the level of what they are.
Certainly, that's one, definitely one of the elements of this that excites me most. But another one that I think I know I've looked at a lot, and I know I think you have as well, as far as I'm aware, is that we've mentioned this earlier. Titus Howard obviously is going to be starting at left guard this year. I think it's a good move starting him at left guard because he's got experienced players either side of him, but especially with the Tunsil trade. I mean, how much do you think that's going to benefit him moving forward in terms of gaining experience and gaining confidence?
I think it's going to be huge. And Bill O'Brien, I thought, he was asked that question today at his press conference. And the very first thing he brought was interesting, because the very first thing he brought up wasn't how he's going to help him, you know, in the trenches down there when they get to New Orleans in week one. Eventually he got to that in the answer. But the first thing he brought up was just the fact that Titus Howard gets to, you know, have a locker next to Laremy Tunsil, you know, follow Laremy Tunsil around. You know, these are both guys who were first-round picks. See what life is like as a first-round pick. You know, Tunsil's a guy who came into the league. He had to overcome adversity literally from the night he was drafted because of the whole weed gas mask deal that happened with Twitter. So that's a guy that's had to respond to adversity, professional adversity, from literally before the time he was drafted, you know? So that was the first thing O'Brien brought up, was just how beneficial it's going to be to Titus Howard as a pro. Forget about that he's playing next to him, you know, like just that he'll be around Laremy Tunsil and get to watch him go about his business is really beneficial. But yeah, absolutely, along the line. You know, Tunsil himself started as a left guard in Miami as a rookie, so he can really relate to Titus Howard. I think he can, you know, they will have had similar experiences is going to be really beneficial. And I think, yeah, you know, we saw it with Xavier Suofilo back in the day, and Suofilo is not a good football player, but when they made the decision to eventually throw him in there to start, and they started him for probably longer than they should have, but he started for 3 years, he was clearly a better football player when Duane Brown was next to him. When it was Chris Clark or Kendall Lamb or somebody else next to him, Suofilo was a circus. But when Duane Brown was next to him, he was okay. He was all right. You know, he was serviceable. You know, he still had his occasional bad play. I think the presence of Tunsil will have a Duane Brown type effect for him.
Certainly. And then if we have a quick look down the depth chart, have a look at the sort of the back end of it and obviously the practice squad as well, how do you feel about the cuts that they made and the additions they made obviously to the practice squad? Are you overall, are you pleased? Were there any particular surprises for you?
I would say, when I first saw that Vincent Smith was getting released, and then obviously, as you mentioned, he's back on the practice squad, that was a tell to me that something was up with them looking at receivers, and ultimately we saw what it was. They picked up Kenny Stills in the Tunsil trade. I guess, you know, as far as the practice squad goes, I like that they kept Caron Higdon. You know, and a lot of people were big on Demaria Crockett, but I thought Higdon, to me, flashed more. I'm with you on Mitchell and Vincent Smith, that they have a couple of receivers there who got on the field for them last year, been in the system, kind of know the deal. They picked up another quarterback, I guess, for the practice squad. I haven't seen the whole practice squad. A guy who I was disappointed didn't make the 53 was Albert Huggins, the undrafted free agent out of Clemson. I know they paid him a little extra bonus money to get him when the undrafted signings came around. I don't know if he's a guy that made the practice squad or not. You may know better than I do.
He did make the practice squad, yeah.
Yeah, so I was glad to see. I thought he had a chance to make the 53. I thought he did some good things. A little surprised Carlos Watkins made the 53. I know he came into camp with some high hopes, but he was banged up a lot throughout camp. I think the one thing that we're going to see with O'Brien being truly in charge of personnel right now, I think there's going to be a lot of churn along the bottom of the roster. You know, I think there's going to be I think that Bezergen and Lipford, I think guys like that are going to be working overtime, keeping an eye on the waiver wire, keeping an eye on other people's rosters. These are guys, the bottom six or seven guys on the roster are all guys who are exclusively special teamers. So they're going to be earning their keep literally every kickoff and punt they're running down. You know, that's their sole purpose. So I think we could see quite a bit, aside from just the regular churn from injuries and things like that. I think O'Brien's going to be a guy who has that staff always on the lookout for little tweaks and upgrades at the back end of the roster.
Certainly, and I must say that obviously we've mentioned Huggins, we've mentioned Mitchell and Smith. I also like the addition of Terrell Adams, bringing him back to the practice squad. I thought he had quite a good preseason. And I really like the addition of Alex Magoo as well at quarterback. I don't know how you feel about both those guys.
Yeah, I haven't seen enough of Magoo to really have an opinion on him. When Joe Webb got hurt, that necessitated having another quarterback at least in the fold somewhere. You know, I always like having a quarterback on the practice. If you're only carrying two, I like having a quarterback on the practice squad to at least give you the option of somebody who's, I know they're doing a lot of scout team stuff, so they probably know the other team's playbook almost as well as they know O'Brien's. But they're in those meetings every day, so. Generally speaking, I like having a quarterback on there.
Absolutely. And then at the end of the day, this is O'Brien's first preseason as, I guess you could say, de facto GM. How would you grade it so far overall?
I would say, boy, if I had to give a letter grade to this offseason for Bill O'Brien, the GM, the Clowney trade, I give an F. The Tunsil trade, I give a B+. The Duke Johnson trade, I guess a B-. It's hard to give it anything higher than that, seeing as he hasn't even gotten on the field yet. I literally didn't get on the field in the preseason either. All the little tweaks and things like that, some are better than others. Those are the three moves that are going to comprise most of your grade. So I would say probably a C+. I think a C+ feels about right. I mean, the Clowney trade to me, like I said, is just an abomination. The whole handling of the Clowney thing, the urgency with which they acted, though, to fill holes like backup running back with Duke Johnson and left tackle with Laramie Tunsil, the urgency is what is the strength behind those grades, not necessarily the value. It really is interesting to watch Bill O'Brien, a guy who was a, card-carrying draft truther. You know, we want to draft guys and bring them in and get them into our culture. Like, we played that audio today from the combine when he said that. That's indicative of the urgency. The urgency level, he gets an A+. Execution, when you add in Clowney and what they gave up for Tunsil, probably like a C or a C-. Overall roster construct heading into this coming season, probably a B. So I think C-plus feels about right. I don't want to get, I don't want to be too nice to him early on because the Clowney thing kind of sticks in my craw.
Absolutely. So I like to close out these podcasts by throwing the guest off a little bit here and there where I can. I was going to ask you which of the Texans you would clone for a Star Wars character, but you've answered that already. So sticking with the Star Wars theme, here's a question for you then. So O'Brien, obviously, he's a bit of a hit and miss figure with a lot of people. What character would you compare him to most?
I was going to say Emperor Palpatine, but I feel like that might be Jack Easterby might be Emperor Palpatine. You remember when Emperor Palpatine was like, when he was just Senator Palpatine and everybody thought he was this great dude. And then all of a sudden, like, you just found out that the guy wanted to just envelop the world in darkness and take over the world. That could be Easterby. Easterby could be in his Senator Palpatine phase right now. You know who O'Brien is? Anthony, he's Han Solo. That's who he is. He's a gambler. He's out there. He's winning spaceships by playing games of cards with Lando Calrissian. You know, like that's who he's. This is his go after the Millennium. Laramie Tunsil is the Millennium Falcon, basically, is what he is right now. So I think he's Han Solo. Tim Kelly, Chewie. Tim Kelly is Chewie. The beard, and he's got the hairy face, and yeah.
I absolutely love that comparison. I really do. Sean, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Sean T. Pendergast, S-E-A-N, letter T, Pendergast. And you can find me on the radio in the morning on Sports Radio 610 with former Texan Seth Payne from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. and on the Texans postgame show, first one this Monday, late into the evening hours after what is hopefully a victory over the New Orleans Saints.
I can't wait to finally have some proper football back. Sean, thank you once again. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've been your host, Anthony Wood. Follow me on Twitter at ARWoodNFL. And of course, keep up to date with everything Texans at the Texans Wire of USA Today. Thank you very much for listening.